Now, if you, like me, are someone who spends a bit of time on Twitter, the news in the past few days that they've signed a massive ad deal might have you a little bit worried that your beloved social network is about to become completely inundated with advertising. Now, our guest, tech writer and all-round guru, Stilgherrian, is also a major user of Twitter. Still, do we have to worry about yet another fun place being completely inundated with advertising?
Well, I reckon, Dom, that's the core question to this deal. Because as we've spoken about before, Twitter is currently burning money. That their valuation, based on an investment by a Saudi prince a little over 12 months ago, reckons that Twitter is worth $8.4 billion as a company. And yet they're only making a couple of $100 million a year in revenue. So there's kind of a few zeros we need to add to the end of that. So this deal is interesting. The company, which is Starcom MediaVest Group, and anyone outside the advertising industry will go, who?
Yeah, that's okay. My reaction when I saw that.
These are the guys who place the advertising for Coca-Cola, for Procter & Gamble, which is like every soap, powder and soap and cosmetic company, you know, that isn't all of the others, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a company that has billions of dollars of advertising dollars to spend and has now said, fine, we're going to start spending that on Twitter on behalf of all of these major corporations.
So essentially these are the people who deal with the biggest, some of the biggest companies in the world.
Yeah. Serious advertising money. Now, the numbers that I've seen them talking about, which are again in terms of hundreds of millions of dollars per year of advertising money that could come into Twitter, my little back of the envelope calculation says that, okay, if that is the deal and that will then attract other smaller advertising groups, this could fill the gap that Twitter needs to fill and say, okay, this is the revenue that justifies your valuation. Because they've got the audience. There's 100 million plus 150 million people using Twitter regularly, you know, which is probably a little more than this program. But, you know, that's the kind of numbers they have to deal with. That could work over the next few years. But of course, the flip side is if what if all the people using Twitter decide, look, I don't actually want these ads. I'll go over somewhere else.
Now, this is very interesting because Twitter, if you haven't used it, essentially it's a series of short messages posted by anyone from, you know, individuals like Stilgherrian and myself, who are very annoyingly opinionated and tweet all the time. He's at Stilgherrian. Yeah. I'm at Dom Knight. We're constantly putting stuff up. Big
but
media
organisations. We are rare in this because we interact with people. Yeah. And we talk back. The vast majority of people who use Twitter don't actually tweet very much. Mm. They might to a couple of friends, but they'll follow Justin Bieber, CNN News, ABC News, you know, a few news feeds, a few celebrities and a couple of friends. And people like us who are constantly interacting are actually kind of maybe 1% of the population.
Yeah, so
they don't actually care about us.
Of them are lurkers who are just consuming rather than actually providing
content.
But
in the same way that most of your listeners on this program are lurkers, they don't phone into the talkback.
And you really should, by the way, 1-300-222-702. But just for those who haven't ever seen Twitter, essentially it's just a collection. You follow people you find interesting, and whatever they tweet up comes to you in real time. And, for instance, last week when the Boston bombings occurred, it was absolutely inundated by news about that, quite a lot of which was dodgy, but that's a whole other conversation.
A lot of the conversations at the pub are dodgy.
Yeah.
And that's why...
Gossip and rumour.
Yeah, exactly. So Twitter is kind of like every conversation you've ever had in a pub or around the dinner table at a family gathering, except globally with 150 million people.
Yeah, all at once.
All at once.
So essentially it's a giant discussion table with a massive number of seats all going all the time. So if you can imagine a dinner party and you're having some banter, you're having some interesting conversation, you're having essentially all different kinds of chat, all very interesting, and then someone just jumps up and starts talking about cola or washing powder.
Yeah.
How annoying is that going to be to you as a user? Is it going to be annoying enough that you might... go have your dinner somewhere else?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? Because I found it interesting in all of the news stories about this, they're comparing Twitter's advertising level with television. Now, television is like the platinum standard of advertising because that's where most of the money is. And I'm just trying to find the figures. Here we go. Each year around the world spent on television advertising. Have a guess of the number.
Oh, gosh, I don't even want to embarrass myself with my numeracy. Right. I'm going to say $100 billion.
Double it. $205 billion.
That was a lot closer than I normally am with these things. Still, Garen's explaining to us what might happen if Twitter has ads on it. But we've been raised, of course, to expect advertising on broadcast television.
Yeah. I mean, that was part of television from the very beginning. Advertising was part of newspapers from the very beginning. It was part of, you know, so many media from the very beginning. But from the very beginning of Twitter, and indeed the very beginning of most internet startups, they start off without the advertising because their aim in the first few months or couple of years is to get the users. And this, it's kind of a bait and switch thing there, really, isn't it? That we'll get everyone in, we'll get them talking to their friends on this new medium, and then once they're settled in, once they've got all their friends there with them and it's too much effort to move,
it becomes indispensable.
Then we'll flip on the big magic button that says Coca-Cola, Procter & Gamble, insurance, erectile dysfunction tablets, you know, whatever it might be, just like has happened to commercial talk radio.
Yeah, and look, Facebook's done it. A few other people have done it.
You know, they're going to get this money. They're going to pay for this thing somehow.
That's a very interesting thing. I mean, I personally would be very happy to pay not to have ads in Twitter, but I guess
there are people who believe that, and that's why there is a thing called app.net.
Yes, we've talked about this before, still, Gary, in the other service. The problem though is that there are very few people are still on it. It's this
that's right, because
Twitter-like service we have to pay a subscription to join.
Yeah. $3 a month.
For ads.
No, they've actually recently launched a free level. You can try it for free.
Okay.
It's app.net, app.net. And look, this is at the moment for people who are experimenting and playing around with things on the internet because it's a very small community. It's still in kind of test mode. It's still a lot of geeks talking about how they might use this service. So if you're looking for the latest news from Justin Bieber or the ABC or from whatever it might be, you're not going to find that there yet. But what they've offered is they've said, we will provide, and it was kind of like a rebellion against Twitter. Twitter could have been this in the early day, but they decided to go we're a media company. We're going to link up with TV networks so that when you're watching Q&A, that all of you, your interaction with Q&A happens via Twitter and the tweets come up on the screen on the TV. So that is now part of the media landscape. These other guys are saying, but yeah, do you really want Twitter kind of playing their game and putting your ads in it? I don't know. I've met the guys starting app.net.
It's a bit like cable TV, I suppose, where you pay and hopefully, you know, you can watch a movie without ads cropping up.
Yeah, but look at what has happened with cable TV. They go, well, the subscription still isn't enough to pay for this, so we're going to stick ads in it anyway. Obviously not as many ads as a free-to-air commercial network, but, you know, that's just arithmetic, isn't it? You've got to pay for this stuff somehow.
Quick call on the line. John's on the line from Sydney. Hello, John.
Yeah, how you going?
Very well, thanks. What are you? What's your question for Stilgarian?
Oh yeah, I was intrigued by the comment. You said that Twitter's valued at billions, but it's only making hundreds of millions.
Yes, this is
without advertising. And I was intrigued as to what the business model is.
I think Twitter would be intrigued to know what the business model is. This is why many
How's it making hundreds of millions?
How's it making anything, I think, is the question.
Well, the answer is at the moment they're burning through the cash from their initial investors. And this is how internet
startups work. So it's not actually making any money?
No. It's running at a loss.
So you said it was
making hundreds of millions. I misunderstood.
Well, sorry. Its revenue is hundreds of millions coming in, but they've also got those kind of costs going out.
Well, this is the question still. Do they have any revenue source at all?
Well, yeah. They have some advertising at the moment. And also, if you are a major company that deals with the demographic analysis of advertising, they will sell to you a raw feed of all the tweets in the world for those companies to analyze and then advertise to you in other media. So the kind of numbers... Look, I should say that any business starting up on the internet or a corner shop is initially going to be running at a loss until they establish a customer base and pay off their initial investment and blah, 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 blah.
I'm just looking very quickly. Still Garin's spot on. In 2012, they brought in $350 million.
Yeah.
John, I'm just not entirely sure where that comes from. From selling the data, there is some advertising revenue.
Yeah, about half and half. About half's from advertising. This very roughly, you know, it could be a third and two thirds, but about half comes from paid ads. There are already sponsored tweets on Twitter.
Yeah.
And the rest comes from selling the data about who's using it and when to these data mining companies. But see, that's about $300 million. But I mean, ballpark figure, if the share price, now Twitter has not floated yet, and this is why there's so much hype about it. It is going to be floated on the stock market sometime this year is expected. And it's going to be the biggest internet float since Facebook.
John, does this clear up your question? There are already some ads on the app, certainly on the website of Twitter and some of their apps that they produce themselves.
Yeah, well, I'm not a regular user, as you could probably tell, but I was intrigued as to what
it was. A very good question. I thought that as well, and I forgot to follow up, so thank you very much asking.
Thank you very much.
It's spot on. Thanks, John.
Because
you're quite right. And John's right. When you value a company, and look, where this valuation came from is that at the end of 2011, Prince Al-Walid bin Talal, who's a member of the Saudi royal family, invested $300 million in Twitter, and for that he got X percent ownership.
Blue sky, basically.
Yeah. And so he's hoping that when Twitter floats on the share market sometime soon, a date has not been announced, but a date has not been announced for a year now. We've been kind of, you know, they're waiting for the moment. And the reason I think they're holding off is that Facebook floated on the share market and its shares opened at $38, and not very long afterwards they'd sunk to under $20.
Yeah, and the deal they've done this week still, I imagine, dramatically increases their perceived value.
Absolutely, and that's why all of the analysts in the US, many analysts in the US are talking up the value of Twitter, and we can see them generating much more advertising over the next few years and blah, blah, blah. And my response to all of that is, do you remember Facebook? Not Facebook, MySpace. I screwed that up. MySpace. You know, MySpace was the biggest thing on the internet not that many years ago.
Yeah, News Corporation bought it and
for $470 million from memory?
Something like that. Yeah, they had a huge...
And sold it for under $100 million.
Peanuts. We asked you on Twitter, in fact, from our Twitter account, at 702 Sydney, whether it would affect how you use Twitter if there were ads. And our replies include this one from N. Saeed, who's mentioned that he might leave if, in fact, there are ads there, because it might become too annoying. I'm sure lots of people are thinking the same thing. Now, still, let's move on to the subject of Lulzsec.
Uh-huh.
And, why is it that all these people have such bizarre names? Because we're talking about them as very serious, some would say, criminals.
There's criminal charges being laid. Yes. That sounds criminal to me.
But then when you say Lulzsec, it sounds as like it's a bunch of teenagers mucking around, which is also
sometimes true. Yeah.
So this is the nefarious world of hacking. Still, what do Lulzsec do?
Well, okay, let's a quick potted history. Lulzsec blipped into existence around about mid 2011. It was a small group of hackers who are either rivals of Anonymous or former members of Anonymous who got annoyed that Anonymous wasn't being serious hacking enough for them.
Right.
And they decided that they would start, like Lulzsec is short for Lulz Security, so L-U-L-Z and then Sec for security. And the Lulz, doing it for the Lulz, for the laughs, they said, we will expose the security flaws in other people's networks on the internet just for the laughs.
Not kind of activists like Anonymous trying to make a political point, as they sometimes do,
For their self-entertainment. It's a bit like saying, oh, mate, I just broke your leg, but it's just for laughs. You know. So there still really was damage done by them. Now,
What are some of the things that they've done still? Just to put it in concrete terms, what do they actually do when they go and hack websites?
Well, for example, do you remember back when all of Mr. Murdoch's papers in Britain, or many of them, News of the World, was caught up in the phone hacking scandal?
Yes, leading to the Leveson inquiry. We've talked a great deal about that.
So they hacked into the Sun newspaper and put on the front page of the sun.co.uk a story that Rupert Murdoch was dead and various bits and pieces. At the same time they had access in there, they got all the usernames and passwords for all of the staff of that newspaper and News of the World in London.
Can we just clarify, Murdoch is not dead?
He's not dead.
That was what Lulzsec said when they hacked into this. Just in case you joined us halfway through that sentence.
They have been alleged to be involved in the hacking of HB Gary, which is an American company that did information security work for the US government. And another company called Stratfor, which was a private security analysis company that again did work for the US government, for the oil industry, etc., etc.
Am I right in thinking WikiLeaks dumped a huge amount of communications from Stratfor at one point?
Yes. Right. What happened in the hack of Stratfor was that a vast amount of email concerning Stratfor's activities found its way into the hand of WikiLeaks. I think it's probably the neutral way of putting that.
It'd be fair to say then that Lulzsec are pretty adept hackers. They're getting into some of the world's most prominent media properties and brands and so
well,
on.
I'm going to go high profile than rather necessarily adept.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is that many, many, many companies have, shall we say, gaps in their security.
You realise your website's just been hacked literally this second by someone from Lulzsec. Mm-hmm. Stilgarian.com is now down, probably.
Don't give them ideas, Dom, because they'll do it. But pretty much that's how it's happened. But all of the tools to do hacking are downloadable from the internet if you know where to look.
Please don't.
And in the same way, and the example I always use, any of us could go to a hardware store and get a jemmy bar and use that to pry open the window of someone's house.
Yep.
Any locksmith who helps you get into your car when you've had a shandy or two and left the keys in it, he can get into your car or your house, and that means he can get into any car or any house should he choose to do so.
So,
And the tools are also used by the white hat hackers, the guys who we call penetration testers. So if you're a bank or a company and want to test your defences, you'll hire these guys to try it out. And they are, if you like, as I say, they wear a white hat. They're on the ethical side of the fence. And they'll come back with a report and say,
yep,
we got into your system, not because of any technical thing. And here's a classic one. We just left some CDs lying around in your car park, which looked like they were the latest album from a famous pop star. We're just handwriting CD on. And what happened is your guys who went out for a cigarette at lunchtime brought that back in, put the CD in the computer at work, and the CD may or may not have had the music on it, but what it did, it had software which took over the computer, and bingo, we now have control of that computer inside your office.
So just to explain what Stilgarian's saying in another way, there are these white hat hackers who, for instance, if you build a boat, you might try to fill it with water, for instance, to see if there are any holes in it where the water's going to come through before you put it in the ocean. So the people you can get who have these skills but essentially use it for good, arguably. Mm-hmm. But then Lulzsec, you'd call them black hat hackers, I guess. Who
they would call themselves grey hat because they think they're doing it for fun.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's not fun if you're on the receiving end and you suddenly find that your newspaper website has a false story on the front page, your staff usernames and passwords are out on the internet, and you now have to spend tens of thousands of dollars cleaning up the mess.
All right. So we've got a sense.
That's the kind of expense that if I went in with a sawn-off shotgun into a local branch of a bank and nicked $20,000, I'm a serious criminal.
Yes. So there you go.
We can argue it backwards and forwards, I'm sure. Get a bullet in the head pretty quickly from our hard-working police force.
So still, the news today, there's been an arrest in Sydney.
Someone who
claims to be
the leader of Lulzsec,
and the ABC, I believe, is not identifying him at this point in time.
Well, here's the question. His employer has identified him. His name is in the media, so I would be happy to give his name. I don't see that there's much use in doing so, because if people want to look that up, they
can go and check it out. The question is, what is this all about? I mean, there's someone who's been arrested and charged.
Yeah. Can I scroll back just a bit in history? Lulzsec This is the bit I don't understand. He's claiming to be the leader of Lulzsec, but it's more than nine, I think about 9 months ago, Lulzsec said that they weren't, oh no, even longer than this, much longer than this. Lulzsec said they were, they got bored with it.
They were hanging up their grey caps.
Yeah, yeah, they were bored. They'd had their fun. More to the point, many of them got arrested, or many, alleged members got arrested. Now, all of the news reports from about a year ago were saying that there was about 6 to 8 core members of Lulzsec.
Yeah, I'm seeing a week ago, ABC News reported that a 25-year-old hacker was sent to prison in the US.
His case finally came up. He's gone to prison. Because the key thing, way back, even before they'd done those high-profile security hacks that we mentioned, they happened around Christmas 2011. In August 2011, the guy by the name of Sabu was his online identity. It was a French guy, Hector Xavier Monsegur, who was in his 20s. He had been arrested by the FBI in August 2011, turned to become an FBI informant. And when all of those security-related hacks were happening, he was already an FBI informant and reporting back on the others. There was then, in early 2012, a series of arrests in the US, the UK and France, and there was there are weird links that no one's really kind of explained properly between Lulzsec and Anonymous. But there was a guy called Barrett Brown in Texas who was the voice of Anonymous, although he made it very clear he was not part of the group that did the hacking. He just would talk about what their motives were. I actually spoke to him in May last year in a podcast, and he said in May last year that he thought Anonymous and by implication Lulzsec, he was obviously bitter because his friends had betrayed the organisation. He said Anonymous was crippled.
So it's
and I'm thinking,
hard.
Why am I talking to this guy? But then it got to September and he too has been arrested.
So it's enormously hard to figure out who represents these groups and who doesn't. Yeah. And whether or not it's still in operation or not.
Yeah, the line I used earlier today on a TV spot was that in any criminal underground, there are people who want to build up a reputation, so they'll tell tall stories about themselves. So an interesting feature of this case, which will come up, is that the federal police are saying that this young chap from the central coast of New South Wales had claimed self-proclaimed leader of Lulzsec. And I find that interesting because I had thought when I started counting up the arrests that the ringleaders were all under arrest. So this is an interesting question. And it'll come down to it because, I mean, I got abused by people on Twitter earlier. Well, not really abused, but people pointed out, hang on, Lulzsec, like Anonymous, says it has no leaders.
No leaders, yeah.
But you can say you don't have a leader as much as you want, but I'm pretty damn sure there is plenty of criminal law which says this is how we establish whether someone is the ringleader of a conspiracy.
Well, this is the thing. It's going to come down to what they can prove in court when it's heard. However, the thing is still, as ABC News has reported today, there is a suggestion that he may have had access. In fact, federal police have said that he had access to sensitive federal government information. So.
Oh, well, the wording of this is interesting because the federal police are saying he had access to information on his employer, which was a security company. He had information on their government clients. His employers have issued a media release saying, in fact, he was a junior night shift technical support worker on a 3-month probationary period who did not have access to customer information. He was just there to answer technical queries from an American client, their day shift, our night shift, etc.
Now, well, this
now
is both be fascinating
of those,
in court.
Both of those things can be true.
Yeah, he could be masquerading as a menial job, and yet at night, a sort of grey hat superhero or supervillain, depending on how you put it.
You know, he may know who the government clients are, but doesn't have it. And
it'll come out in court, the nefarious world of hacking.
They have issued just a very short time ago an additional statement saying that the company, Content Securities, there's a name, that's in the media now, takes the privacy and security of customer information very seriously. We are confident that our industry best practices have successfully prevented and it says, there is no possibility of access to sensitive documents without a private key and a passphrase, which Mr. X did not have. Shall I say his name? No.
No, I don't think
All right.
Let's
and they say, well,
let's hope that's
he may
the way
not be meant to have it. Did he have it? Now here's it. I mean, I think if we scroll
we're gonna have to bail out a bit here.
I will say the one line, this is the first significant case that is going to be heard after recent revisions to Australia's cybercrime law.
Yes,
everyone will be watching this.
That is one of the reasons why I'm so fascinated about this case, because there's just all this boasting and bragging, and will it,
the hackers
will it
brag,
prove to
the
be
police
true?
Brag, the police, of course,
the
will
The PR
talk
brag
up.
From the security people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It'll all come out in court. Thank you very much, Still Gary.
My pleasure, Dom.
Navigating us through the complicated information security highways.
Their theme song was the Love Boat theme song.
The Lulz Boat.
The Lulzsec were great. They got so much media attention because they were so media friendly.
At least they had a sense of humour. Thank you, Still.
For the Lulz, cheers, Dom.
You can find Stillgarian on Twitter, at least while it remains ad-free, at Stillgarian. In a moment, Giles Huddy's going to join us from his sick bed for some movie reviews of movies he hasn't seen because he's got the mumps. How is that even possible? And who gets the mumps today anyway?